Our second lecture presentation this morning is by Diana McKendry, who we thank for setting up this wonderful altar, and her title is The Crossing Point.
To sound extremely repetitive, it is good to be here. And I have to tell you that when you are given a slot to give a keynote talk and several brilliant people have preceded you, you rewrite your talk after each one. So you're getting about the third or fourth or fifth version here. The crossing point. I want to begin with sharing a poem with you. It's called The Magic Escapes. Was that a pinprick of light? An angel in flight? Or a brain cell's goodbye before joining the night? Am I all alone in seeing these things? Have I ruined my mind or been given my wings? You see, people are guarded about their belief because when held in stark monochromatic relief against common sense, all the magic escapes, leaving us nothing more than mud shaped like apes. Never once did I think I would live this long, always positive that it would all go wrong. Now I'm totally lost as for what I should do after all of the mazes and doorways I've ventured through. Does it matter to you if I'm crazy or right? If I think that the stars all converse in the night? That they send us their wisdom and mana to grow. If you ask how I know, I'd say they told me so. You see, people are guarded about their belief because when held in stark monochromatic relief against common sense, all the magic escapes, leaving us nothing more than mud shaped like apes. Caught a glimpse of the mirror behind the veil, and I lived through the twister to tell the tale to the marked ones like me with hearts open wide and plant seeds in the sane where the dreams still reside. The magic escapes. The initial image in this poem is that of a tiny pinprick of light, a symbol of consciousness, a tiny spark of something new that has been given as a potential. Wisdom, Sophia, has appeared suddenly from a dark, unconscious place. Or is this the flash of union Gary introduced us to yesterday? Andrew Thompson is the author of this poem. He's a 30-year-old man who lives with severe paranoid delusions. A blessed and extraordinary being who offers us a glimpse beyond the veil. He's become a teacher for me. I could read this poem again and then invite you to 45 minutes of meditative silence, and we would each find any number of images that we personally relate to. This is an allusion and an illustration of the language of soul, filled with images and a deep sentiment that touched the heart. I feel it captures in the deepest way soul's struggle today. Embracing image is a spiritual practice. Risking relationship on every level of our being with image must lead us inward and down and simultaneously upward and out. This is the crossing point. As M.C. Richards said long ago, the flow goes both ways, And there is that instant point where we rest in the quiver of the double realm. We have an opportunity to enter the crossing point within our soul with each and every dream and dream image we are given. This is the womb within where process is conceived and individuation is birthed. How do we commit to this? How do we live a conscious life? By definition, individuation is the lifelong process of becoming fully aware of your psyche, enriching your life so that you might live into the fullness of your authentic creativity. It's a commitment made by you, for you, and gradually lived into that day when you discover that your inner world and your outer world mirror one another. When you experience the union and the unity simultaneously. This is living in process within the ebb and the flow of your unique natural rhythm, which you have discovered and experienced. This is where spirit is grounded in matter. Now, we know we don't live in isolation, but within the context of community, in the context of another, the other, within some makeshift version of unity. So how do we honor our personal process in such a way that we honor those within and without who we love, who make it all possible? Individual intention, labor, and will are all components to this process, but it is the other that is necessary. The other may be your relationship with your version of the stranger, as Jung's spiritual partner, Philemon, or your spouse or partner in waking life, who has enabled your evolution through your body and sexuality. It is the other that is the grist that creates the rub that gradually and persistently forms the pearl of essence and being. We are continually recreated by an ongoing myriad of inner and outer exchange. Now, soul is very shy. She's like a tiny, tiny little bird. And this tiny bird risks appearing only when the container, the ego, is flexible enough, permeable enough, to hold her so that she might release her deep feelings and wisdom that lead her to her and your unique expression. For this to happen, she needs space. Lao Tzu wrote a poem that captures this beautifully. The use of not. 30 spokes meet in the hub. Where the wheel isn't is where it is useful. Hollowed out, clay makes a pot. Where the pot's not is where it's useful. Cut doors and windows to make a room. Where the room isn't, there's room for you. So the profit in what is in the use of what isn't. I propose it occurs in process, never as a product, but as image experienced as a gift given by the other through heart. Metaphorically, process is the space. I said to my heart, "How, my heart, can you be so crazy as to swerve from the service of the one you bless?" My heart replied, "It's you who are mad to see me wrongly. I am always in the service of the divine. It's you that stray. Tomorrow you'll be brave, you say? Fool. Dive today from the cliff of what you know into what you can't know. You fear the rocks? Better ones than you have died on them. Dying on love's rocks is nobler than a life of death." Rumi. As a community, this community committed to dream, we know about image. We receive image every night. We struggle to capture and hold the elusive fleeting shards as we awaken and return to the waking world. There's a deep longing in soul to be in unity with these mysterious creatures, whether they be human, animal, plant, or abstract. Through these relationships, we're continually nudged along, encouraged to enter the crossing point, to go in and go deeper, and simultaneously go up and out. Paradoxically, this is about embracing simplicity as well. The crossing point is that place in body, mind, and spirit where they all come together. In body, so that we embrace and celebrate fearlessly this body that we've found ourselves in. In mind, that we embrace all of the multi-layered concepts and facts that we have the great privilege of being exposed to and learning. And in spirit, to risk living into our truth embedded in mythology that lives deeply within our own primordial being, within God, the friend. As Larry reminded us, that we might dwell in God and God in us. Sean McNiff, who is the author of a book called Art is a Spiritual Path, says the image is an angel, meaning messenger. We're given and hopefully receive these angels within an attitude of surrender and gratitude as we risk opening ourselves to the unknown of our personal unconscious associations and motivations. A little story about angels. A number of years ago, my mother was dying, and the day before, her grandchild was brought to say goodbye. Taylor was about 5.5 years old, and he came in the room, and he's a rather precocious child, always was. He walked in and he went, "Nanny, it's very crowded in here." And she said, "Is it, Taylor?" "It's just you and me." And Taylor said, "Oh, Nanny, there's so many angels in here. It's so crowded, I have to go into the living room." And he left. He saw what we could not. It was fabulous. It's not about eliminating pain and suffering. It's an invitation to a threshold of transformation. Our relationship with these angels holds the seeds of our creative expression that's waiting to burst forth. What we're all talking about is an organic process of continually being birthed from what was previously birthed before. It's an ongoing process. Every dream image gives birth to the next. Every dream gives birth to the next. So you see, we actually just live and have one big dream. One numinous dream that brings us to that extraordinary potential. With each birth, we are called, obviously, to a doorway and a new threshold. I'm seeing an ever-increasing number of doorways and openings into the unknown appearing in my clients' dreams. The portal, the threshold into this unknown, numinous place to become who they've been created to be, fully actualized, and in sacred relationship with their self and with one another. Dreamers explain to me constantly that they sense or intuit that they are not alone at this threshold. They sense an energy, a being, waiting just on the other side. Being does await us on the other side. Energy is the force, the presence that holds each of us tenderly as we are fired into being. As with pottery, there's always the risk of being shattered, of being broken open, inviting the potter, the stranger, the friend, to begin again, having learned a lesson in the process. In 1971, at a Quaker gathering, a conference of friends, they believed they should proceed with the following mandate: with an inner picture of the friend who stands in the house of self and ripens through the flames. The friend is there for us, even when the fire is too strong and we have to run away. I believe we can all relate to this. We put one toe into the fire, and then we retreat, only to return again and again. When we rationalize and manipulate ourselves to produce product, to operate from a power principle, we lose our shard of divine essence. And as Andrew Thompson reminds us, when the magic escapes, we are all nothing more than mud shaped like apes. Creativity is God's gift to us. Using this creativity is our gift back to God. Julia Cameron. The shards, the pinpricks of light, the images are the gift given. The creative, the unknown, the blessed. We must enter into relationship with these gifts to enable the birthing. Each image we encounter in inner and in our outer worlds is a representative of a new language of consciousness. Becoming fluent with our new alphabet is the only way that we're going to discover the creativity we need to not only survive, but to thrive. Our souls, our communities, our environment, and our dear, sweet, gentle earth desperately needs this. There's a Hasidic tale that suggests that each person's commitment to honor his or her gift of self enables the realization of someone else's gift. What is required is twofold. First, we must acknowledge who we are and that we are sufficient, that accepting that we are called to a higher order where our being gives life to the gift of another, we must risk identifying with and expressing our true self. A good metaphor is the body, with each organ doing what it's given to do, using its unique gift, If one organ fails or breaks down, the entire system is affected. This does enable a process of coming together in unity where each is enhanced by the third, the unknown, the stranger that lives between the two. Wisdom, mystery, divine, Sophia, God, the other. Unfortunately, we identify with numerous illusions, the primary one being that we're separate from each other and everything else. We are special. This establishes polarity thinking, good, bad, either or, us, them. A continuum of conflict follows. Our global despair is the loss and assumption that the species will inevitably make it. Is despair going to be what characterizes our millennium? Are we not being called to partner with one another? To risk being in the place of trusting and not knowing simultaneously? We must acknowledge this despair. We have to experience it, grieve it, name it, so that the energy invested in it unconsciously can be brought forth and released, making room for the new, the unknown, the mystery, the spirit that brings with it that which might propel us forward into a healthier existence. Our indigenous brothers and sisters warn us we're running out of time. We have no tried and true recipe handed down from elders, no magic formulas. Despair is not a solo venture, but one undertaken in the context of community, Joanna Macy said. Margaret Wheatley echoed the sentiment by saying, we must embrace our despair as a step on the road to wisdom. We must risk that unfamiliar seat of not knowing and opening ourselves to radically new ideas. So how do we risk being authentic in unity, healing, becoming conscious, risk purification in relationship and nonviolent interconnectedness, honoring differences with clarity? How do we live humbly in forgiveness, open to the grace we need to live in relatedness with all? I invite you to remember that these questions relate not only to living in community with one another, but also, significantly, they relate to living with all of your own inner aspects within your psyche. We are each an enormous community attempting to find a way to connect. Again, we are called to live in the crossing point. Sometimes people talk about that we're called to merge things. I need to really clarify right now. This is not about merging. We must paradoxically always remain unique and individual while becoming a related community, while experiencing union. I want to tell you a little story that's a great example of what we're not called to. It's an experience I had 16 years ago. As a facilitator of M. Scott Peck's organization, I was booked to conduct a 3-day community building workshop with an established group who described themselves as clothing optional. You're getting the picture already. Now, my co-leader, a young intern in psychiatry from Texas, and I arrived at the mountain spa where we were to meet. And the first of numerous extraordinary images we encountered was A group of 15 men and women marching down the mountain, dressed in hiking boots and carrying knapsacks on their backs. Period. Please know that the negotiations that were made before we got there had clearly stated that we were not clothing optional people. When we gathered with the 50-odd men and women of all ages, and I might say various shapes and sizes, it was very clear they did not choose to read the bulletin stating that this would be an experience wearing clothing for the duration. After 3 hours of deep, conflicted conversation, it was established that clothing meant a top and a bottom. Now, dear George and I were so relieved at this point, we neglected stating this meant at all times. So, with the first break, in a New York minute, they were all naked and leaning on one another in extreme affectionate ways. At this moment, George grabbed my arm and pulled me aside and said, "Diana, I can't do this. I have diarrhea. I can't do this. It's the Baptist in me." My condensed response was, "George, get over it." We proceeded under these bizarre conditions. And by the third day, people were sharing their stories and their true feeling about the group's norms and activities of merging, as well as their fears and perceptions of their leader's sophisticated maze of manipulation. Some began to say no. The good news was, it was a cult that was identified and basically broken. I can promise you, this is not something you're going to be invited into to experience here this week. No matter the number of references you may hear embodying your sexuality and your body. Now, back to the talk. No single individual is responsible for our situation, and no single individual has the solution. We have to bring together all that we are and that we have access to. I certainly don't have the answer to these huge questions. But I do believe deeply that we are being given pinpricks of light each night as we dream. These tiny windows are our salvation as they offer us the opportunity to bring into the light all that is hidden, that which is in its shadow existence, the gold, the prima materia of the alchemical process, the consciousness we must discover. In playing with gold, I was discovering that the atomic number for the chemical element of gold is 79, and that the symbol is Au, A-U, meaning shining dawn. Now, I pulled out my tarot cards and discovered that the numerology number 7 is the chariot. It signifies unity within complexity. It's about man who has gained control of himself and has harnessed his animal instincts. Number 9 is the hermit, the seeker of truth with only a lantern, his intuition, to guide the way. The hermit thirsts for spiritual knowledge and wisdom. Also, if you explore numerology and the alphabet a little further, you'll discover that number 7 is associated with 3 letters. G, which represents mysticism and religion. P, which represents power. And Y, representing freedom. Now, 9 is associated with the letter I, which represents law, and the letter R, which represents possibilities. So, for those of you who are so inclined, you can play with any number of interpretations here, exploring the implications and the meaning of gold, and metaphorically, wisdom. Here's one of mine. Mysticism and religion, representing power and freedom, are in an integrated relationship with the law of possibilities. Mysticism and religion, representing power and freedom, are in an integrated relationship with the law of possibilities. Empowered freedom integrated in relationship with the law of possibility. Sounds pretty good. Rumi said, "Go on a journey from self to self, my friend. Such a journey transforms the earth into a mine of gold." I can go on playing with numerology. However, that is another lecture. It does, however, bring me to Ken Wilber, the philosophical thinker who offers us his integral theory of consciousness, the understanding that all must be included, all must be received and included in the mix for the new to manifest into its new fertile form. Wilber challenges us to consider and acknowledge his spectrum of consciousness model, which accepts equally body, mind, soul, and spirit. He weaves together everything from fields of physics to neurophysiology, chaos theory, biochemistry, art, poetry, aesthetics, developmental psychology from Freud to Jung to Piaget, philosophies of the East and the West, and mystical schools of meditative traditions and more. You get the picture. He speaks of orienting generalization and sturdy conclusion, respectfully assembling all of the conclusions of every field, believing that each has important truths for us. He does not operate from the place of changing, challenging, converting, and fixing, but rather from a position of honoring differences, a place of unity. His questions, what coherent system would in fact incorporate the greatest number of truths? I challenge you to consider that we're attempting to do just this very thing when we risk relationship with the images we've been given to incorporate the greatest number of truths of the personal deep images within, that we might accept each aspect. But we must remember each aspect is only partial, not the whole. No one aspect of self is all. When one aspect of self is all, this constitutes a state of psychosis, where there's no boundaries of definition, where merging is the experience and the reality. So we're challenged to remember that whatever we believe, we've defined the whole of a belief, of self, of other. We must acknowledge that it's only part of a larger whole. It's all relative to time, place, and perspective. Aristotle commented, "We can't judge the value of our lives until the end. We can't ever accept that the work is complete. We can't accept that we've evolved to a state where the humbling process of being broken apart only to be put back together again in yet another form is not the norm. It is what is. We've excelled in our scientific evolution, but we're mere adolescents in our interior development. We need to grow up, mature, and respond as adults. We need to live into balance. I think this requires honoring and the reception of heart, that she might enter into the sacred marriage with mind. Another way of saying that is that power and intimacy must be courted simultaneously, that they might become fully integrated, celebrated, and committed to one another. Paula Reeves and Marie-Louise von Franz have directed us for years towards the liberation of the heart. John O'Donohue taught us that in Celtic understanding, the soul is the place where the imagination lives, and he and John Philip Newell continually bring us to the thin places of our lives. It's in these thin places we have the opportunity of experiencing the numinous. I've been given permission to include a woman's account of such a moment. She writes, "I was blank, I mean really blank, on a dream image when it was my turn to be the dancer in a body-soul exercise. Suddenly, words from a conference at seminary 10 years earlier drifted into my mind. Will you dance with me? It was a powerful time in my life, so I thought, I can use that question for the image. It can take me anywhere. So I relaxed. What I did not remember at the time was that while traveling to this earlier event in the year 2000, I had an image of a flame in my left peripheral vision. I remember that then I even tried to paint it. Now, almost immediately as the music began, I was free. And in a flash, I became the burning bushes from my dreams, then pure flame. I danced the entire time with my eyes closed and eventually realized tears were streaming down my face. I could have kept going for hours. I knew it was important. It may be the most important thing that had happened to me in any intensive. I could not and did not want to put words to it, despite knowing the importance of giving voice to my experience. This is a beautiful example that expresses her experience, where she risked fine-tuning her perception, her standpoint. This is clearly not a linear process or an experience of cause and effect. It's a spiral process of in and out, up and down, of being in the crossing point, never being able to predict what is next. As we spiral around, we must strive for the middle way, staying within our personal range of what is safe, holding the tension of the opposites so that our personal middle way enables us to live from the crossing point. As we hold the tension of opposites, an unknown third is born, a creative and frequently undreamed of awareness. Think of your body standing, holding the tension vertically with the divine, with the friend, with the unknown, and horizontally, simultaneously, with the outer world. This way. The center of the tension is the heart. It is the point of the greatest tension. It is the birthing place of new. We seldom question our assumptions about how life works as a whole until our present form or framework is challenged. Invariably at these times, we discover that just being is what actually matters, when we can stay in that center point of holding that tension. We experience a connectedness with a larger whole. We must learn to walk gently, our Aboriginal relations say. We must be willing to not win, not be in competition with, and not hold power over. Winning is a temporary illusion with a very high price. We must regain our sense of gratitude for exchange. As technology advanced, so did the sense of power and conquest that brought with it a distancing from nature and a subsequent loss of our sense of organic relatedness. Thomas Berry challenged us to accept that human is a subsystem of the Earth system, that is itself a subsystem of the universe system. When I put it into this perspective, I find it's very humbling to be a human speck in the grand scheme of things. We have to be open to the mysterious space between. This is something that's motivated my personal quest since grade 3, when I was reprimanded severely when I asked the question, what is between the molecules? I was told I was not paying attention. The wisdom tradition states that the space between thought is the window to the soul. It's all about being present. Present to the crossing point, to that place of trusting and not knowing simultaneously, to finding balance. We're called to experience as well as analyze and understand. With the release of the Red Book, we have beautifully seen that Carl Jung not only understood but embraced relationship with the numinous he discovered within himself. He lived within the interior world in his exterior existence. They were one. An example of the desperate call in our dreams is a dream that I was given, again, permission to share with you of a woman client. She came upon a torso that was wired and suspended on an iron fence. As she entered into conversation with torso, asking torso how she became mutilated, she heard torso say, "I'm struggling for you to get it because I'm broken and this is my last breath. My purpose and my intention has been for you to see your feminine aspects of feeling and body. I don't mind being exposed like this, because this way you see me and I feel I am found. However, I do struggle with the fact that my voice is not heard and that my message is not received when this is all I live for. Relationship, relationship, relationship. We see so many children today who can't be in relationship with themselves, it seems, continually texting, typing into some sort of electronic gadget. This can lead to narcissism and a reality without accountability. Many sit alone within a false reality of being part of relationship and part of community without any human contact. Studies have actually shown that less than 15% of communication is the word. There's no soul contact. There is illusion and fantasy, and this may be creative in one way, but there is no touch, no true contact with matter. There can be no hope of grounding spirit into matter when we live in a reality that's quite possibly illusion. Now, as synchronicity would have it, exactly at the moment I was writing that paragraph into my laptop computer, I received an email telling me from a dear friend of mine that her granddaughter was visiting with a European cousin, and that evidently the granddaughter was attempting to communicate with this distant cousin who apparently did not speak English. Without batting an eye, she pulled out her iPod and translated so that both enjoyed and deepened the relationship. So the immediate compensation that synchronicity brought me was terribly obvious, as fate presented me with a complete opposite to my judgmental opinion. It's all about balance. I'm always grateful when the universe intervenes to keep me somewhat in alignment. She has an extraordinary sense of humor with perfect timing, I've experienced. Connections above and below are shifting. We're surprised that the external reality and the internal can become interchangeable. This is consciousness, and individuation is freedom. We need one another. We need to risk planting seeds in the sane, where the dream still resides. Our actual enemy is not any force exterior to ourselves, but our own crying weakness, our cowardice, our selfishness, our hypocrisy, our sentimentalism. Sri Aurobindo wrote this before he died in 1950. He was an Indian nationalist and a mystic freedom fighter. He wrote this after having a vision of our evolution into life divine. In his own words, he said, "Man is a transitional being. He's not final. That with our connection to the evolving soul, we overcome ignorance, division, dualities, and suffering. To live fully in the crossing point, do we dare? Can we be intentional about creating the space we need to do the work?" Judy Brown wrote a fabulous poem about this. It's called Fire. And I think it helps link us to the alchemical process that we're all talking about and that we're here for, as well as space. What makes a fire burn is space between the logs. What makes a fire burn is space between the logs, a breathing space. Too much of a good thing, too many logs packed in too tight, can douse the flames almost as surely as a pail of water would. So building fires requires attention to the spaces in between as much as to the wood. When we're able to build open spaces in the same way we've learned to pile on the logs, when we can come to see how it is fuel and absence of the fuel together that make fire possible. We only need to lay a log lightly from time to time. A fire grows simply because the space is there with openings in which the flame that knows just how it wants to burn can find its way. As my friend Kat reminded me, when something is ready to be born and is striving to be heard, she finds a way. She finds a voice through all avenues and channels available. That's been happening here since we've arrived, and I have no doubt it will continue until and after we leave. May your peace find her way to you this week. I invite you now to call forth a stranger, a friend, an image from your personal storeroom, and listen for a moment, remembering David White's words. Sometimes it takes darkness and the sweet confinement of your aloneness to learn that anything and anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you. Sometimes it takes darkness and the sweet confinement of your aloneness to learn that anything and anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you. Take a moment in silence and be with your friend, your stranger within, and listen.